count your blessings. I guessed there was something wrong as soon as I turned into the street. There was a kind of stillness not often seen there. Not unless something serious or somber was happening, like a funeral. And we hadn't seen anything like that for some 3 years now, Mrs. Jackson's funeral being a case in point. The funeral cortege left from her house, and a long line of black cars and all the curtains along the street closed tightly shut. My mother covered the mirrors in the house for good measure, just like she did when there was a thunderstorm, and she opened all the windows downstairs. She said it was to ensure that the spirit passed through and didn't get stuck. I had nightmares for weeks, imagining that Mrs. Jackson's soul had somehow made its way upstairs, where all the windows were shut, and now her spirit was batting against those windows, trying to get out, bruising its delicate soul wings like those of a moth, or better still, a beautiful butterfly. I worried for days about what would happen to her soul if she didn't reach heaven in time. Would she get there and be told that the gates were shut because she got there too late? God hated lateness. Mrs. Davidson said so. Would she be given the chance to appeal? And then what? Would Mrs. Jackson become one of those angry poltergeists you read about in Family Circle, throwing herself and spirit about the house walls and scaring everyone witless, all because she's late? Whew. It was a dilemma I intended to take with me to Sunday school and ask Mrs. Davidson about. But she was more interested in making sure we drew pictures of that Sunday's parable. I got so engrossed with drawing people walking past the sick and injured man lying in the road that it totally skipped my mind. When I got home, Mum was sitting in the kitchen, her face wet with tears. A crumpled, soggy tissue lay on the bunker, and there was no evidence of tea in the cooker. Mrs. Scott, who was handing her a cup of tea at the time, looked up and gave me a wan smile. "Come in, dear," she said with her honeyed voice. "Your mum has had a bit of a shock." I immediately thought of Mrs. Jackson. I went and took my mother's hand, and turning her wedding and engagement rings, as I often did when I wanted to speak about something difficult, said softly, "Do you need a magic hug, Mum?" "Yes," she whispered, and enfolded her arms around me. She smelled of Dad's washing powder and rose scent. Will Daddy be coming home soon?" She crumpled around me, sobbing loudly in my ear. Hot tears even fell down the back of my neck. "Has Daddy died?" I asked, faltering, praying that the answer wasn't a yes. "No, but I wish to God he had," Mum exploded. "Now, Cora, settle down. She doesn't need to hear this yet," remonstrated Mrs. Scott. "Yes, she bloody does. Better she hears it from me than anyone else." I stopped turning the rings and looked her full in the face. What could be worse than Daddy dying, I thought. "Your Daddy has left you, dear," Mrs. Scott said gently, rubbing my mother's back. "Will he be coming back?" "No, dear, I doubt it," she replied. "And he's taken half my dresses. Soon you won't have a daddy at all. Fuck him." "Her," interjected Mrs. Scott, always quietly very PC. "Bastard," said Mum. But where has Daddy gone with your dresses and why?" I was a bit perplexed and also quietly excited. I pictured Daddy standing before the wardrobe picking out dresses and carefully packing them into a holdall. Pink wasn't his colour. Mum wore a lot of pink. It never really occurred to me that this was odd. After all, men wear kilts, Jesus wore a dress, and Mr. Nichols, our school Janny, wears a sort of headband. Daddy probably went for the best-feeling fabrics. I'd often seen him linger over materials, turning them inside out and checking for perfect creases or stroking the material. I could just hear him saying, "Nice cut." My mother and Mrs. Scott exchanged glances. "Oh," I thought to myself, "this is where they try to explain it to me in that everything's all right when it clearly isn't voice." "Well, your daddy Mrs. Scott's voice trailed off. "Your daddy doesn't want to be a daddy any more. He wants to be a mummy," wailed my mother. "Cool," I thought. "I'll be the first in my class with two mummies, and that scores higher than just a divorce or separation." Immediately I began constructing my Christmas present list. Anne Pearson told me only the other day that divorce or separation has loads of things going for it. Two holidays, and each parent trying to outdo the other for presents. I think I'm going to enjoy this after all. "Oh well," I said with a sigh. "Two is always better than one," and I skipped off singing the song Mrs. Davidson taught us only that Sunday. "Count your blessings, name them one by one."